Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the Financial Health and Income Network, which is hosted by the Council for Disability Awareness. I'm Carol Harnett, and I'm the president of what we call the CDA. And today I am so happy to introduce to you our guest, Matt Inhofe. Matt is an assistant vice president of representation at Integrated Benefits, Inc., and they are a member company of the CDA. During his time with Integrated Benefits, he has represented claimants at hearings at the Appeals Council and Federal District Court Appeals in the Western District of Missouri and the District of Nebraska, where he is a member of the District Courts. And Matt graduated from the University of Missouri Columbia Law School of Law. So welcome, Matt. I'm so happy to have you with us.
I am very happy to be here. I'm excited to talk to you about this stuff. I'm just very happy and very appreciative that you would ask me to be on.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. And I didn't introduce the topic. I just jumped right into having who you are. But for our audience's sake, I want to just clarify, we're going to be talking about you'll hear us use the acronym SSDI a lot, and that means Social Security Disability Insurance. And our kind of the center of our conversation is going to be how the pandemic has been impacting potentially our listeners' SSDI applications. And Matt, as you know, but our audience may not, part of why we reached out to you to have this conversation is we have at the CDA really active social media streams and a very active blog. And we have a tremendous amount of interest in Social Security Disability Insurance, or SSDI, over the past year. In fact, one of your colleagues during our spring campaign for educating people about the importance of this, all the different kinds of ways you can protect yourself financially if you have a disability during your working years that prevents you from working, was a blog post that one of your colleagues wrote, and it by far was the most popular, had the most number of what we call impressions, the number of people who've seen it, had almost 20% of people who saw us putting that post up actually go in and interact with it, read it, share it, comment about it, like it. So first question I'm just going to ask you is, why do you think so many people really over the last 12 plus months have become so interested in this topic?
Well, I think it has to do with what all of our reality has become since, you know, February or March of 2020. And I think over the years it has shown that any times of economic or other types of hardship, people unfortunately have to turn somewhere for income and things like that. So they have to turn, one of the major sources for that is Social Security Disability. And I kind of buried the lead there. But the COVID pandemic has made people, you know, scared. People have lost jobs. It has become a little more difficult to apply for disability. So people are looking for help. And, you know, organizations such as yours that have a social media presence, they find that online when they're searching for help. And I think that the COVID pandemic and the economic hardship and people losing their jobs or becoming too sick to go back to work, obviously, has really driven an interest in the Social Security Disability Program. And I think that's really what's driving the interest in it. It's an unfortunate reason. It's never a good thing when people, you know, have to apply for disability, but that's what the program's for. So,
right. It's for those times. You know, my colleague, Fred Schott, who runs our research efforts, he's been following all of the national data, and even the government is asking people on a survey, one of the surveys that the government has been using during the pandemic, whether they were considering applying for SSDI, which we were really surprised and pleased to see. So absolutely, I think this is essential we talk about this because now we have people who kind of sort of know about the process, but maybe not necessarily understand how to apply or they're trying to apply and working their way through this. So can you walk us through just so, you know, what the process is like now, but what, and even some commentary about what it was like before, you know, what do you notice? Obviously you have to live this. What do you notice that's really changed?
Well, so, there have been a number of changes, and you know, to Social Security's credit, they've done things and tried to take steps to make it a little easier to apply for disability. But there unfortunately are some realities with Social Security disability office, or Social Security offices, I should say, being closed that have made it more difficult. So, in applying, you know, you are allowed to apply online now. That's been pre-pandemic as well, but you're allowed to apply online. But what they've done is they've made My Social Security accounts where people can get on and track their case. They've allowed, and what's been a big deal for a lot of representatives trying to help people apply is getting electronic signatures on representation forms and medical releases and things of that nature. That's made it easier to get the documents we need, because Social Security requires that we have many of these documents for them to even communicate with us and to help people apply. But yeah, there's an application stage where claimants apply for disability. There's a Social Security farms this out to the state agency level where a medical determination is made on the initial application. If that is approved, obviously the person will go into benefits, but a lot of those cases are denied, unfortunately, and then there's a filing for reconsideration, which also can be done online, and then that is just reconsidering the denial that they just did at the same office, so most of those end up getting denied again, and then the claimant applies or files for an appeal or a hearing in front of an administrative law judge. At that point, it comes back out to the actual Social Security Administration. It's seen by or heard by an actual administrative law judge that works for the Social Security Administration. And that at that point is when an attorney or representative gets very involved in the case, make sure the medical records are developed, and will actually appear with the claimant at that hearing in front of the judge, can, you know, present a case, you know, cross-examine and all of that. If it goes beyond that, then you're in an appeals council stage or a federal district court stage. But for most people that apply for the benefit, they're really concerned with those initial levels and the hearing level. So, you know, I probably said a lot. I guess I should mention, you know, for the last year and a half, with the hearing offices have been closed along with the rest of Social Security. So in-person hearings have been kind of on hiatus for, well, over a year and a half now, since the very beginning of March in 2020. So that is kind of where things are right now. Still, they've allowed those hearings to proceed, but they're all done by telephone. And in recent months, they've set up an online video hearing platform through Microsoft Teams that they are excited about, that they've put a lot of work into developing, and that claimants are able to choose now to go through a hearing by telephone or online video, or they are still allowing people to hold out and wait for in-person hearings.
So this is a lot of change for you too, right? And your colleagues, I would imagine. And you have to think through, I would think, you know, like what's best for your claimant, right? For your applicant, the person that you're trying to help. When you think through what you just described, and you're going, you know, it sounds like before the pandemic, there were some options to start the process online. So not everybody went into a Social Security office. But the hearing processes were always done in person, and now you've got these options, you know, phone and even potentially video. When you think about this, What kind of things do you tell your the person you're representing about what might be a better option for them with a hearing?
So you actually, you know, you hit on it in asking the question. You know, first and foremost, it's always what is in the best interest of the client, okay? And, you know, that answer is not always the same for every client. For some people, a telephone hearing is better. For some people, an online video hearing is better. For some people, they are, you know, an in-person hearing actually is better, and it's worth it for them to wait to be in the same room as the judge. So we as representatives, our job is really to make sure they have all of the applicable information. And we just tell them, here are the pros of this approach, here are the cons of this approach, and let them make the best informed decision for themselves. So if you'll indulge me, I can kind of give some of those pros and cons.
I would love that. Yeah, hearing. I think that would be really helpful for people here, like listening. I think that would be really important for them.
Right. Great. So with the phone hearings, the biggest pro for a phone hearing is it seems to be the quickest way to get your hearing. It seems to be the least involved way to get the hearing. And in a lot of cases, you know, especially for people we found that have maybe a disability more based on a mental health impairment, a phone hearing can help them quite a bit because the judge can't, you know, judge a book by its cover, for lack of a better way to say it. You know, a lot of people with mental health, you know, you can't see a mental health impairment, whereas a broken hip or a degenerative spine, you know, somebody walking with a walker, you can see that. You can't see the mental health stuff. But when the judge is forced to not see this person that looks perfectly healthy in front of them and instead focus on what's in the medical records, we've seen that mental health or people with mental health disabilities have really benefited from these telephone hearings. The downside to the telephone hearings are that it is pretty impersonal. You are more of just a case file than a person. And for somebody with a very obvious visual impairment, you know, not a seeing impairment, but something or the judge can clearly see, that is lost with a phone hearing. There's also the problem of, you know, when you can't see the visual cues of another person talking, one of the biggest problems, and I'd say probably most of the judges' biggest complaints with phone hearings is people talking over each other, thinking somebody is done speaking and then just starting the question, right? And you kind of have a jumbled recording, and, you know, people are getting better at it, but it is, you know, claimants don't have any practice with that, so it is still an issue. As far as the online video hearing, the positives are, you know, you're a person to the judge again. They can see you. They can't, you know, just look at you as a case file. There is a human experience there. And, you know, if there is some sort of, if there is something that the judge can see, they can see it through the video. A perfect example, I have a hearing coming up with a client who is hearing impaired, is very good at reading lips. So a phone hearing would be next to impossible for this person. They don't want to wait for an in-person hearing, but now with the video hearing, the judge's face is right on the screen. My face is right on the screen, and the person will be able to read our lips and participate in the hearing. So I think, or, you know, the same could go for sign language. So those are the positives for the video hearing. The things we worry about with the video hearings are, you know, the judge seeing the person in the, you know, if the person's too far away to come into our office, that person has to appear from home. So then you're relying on their internet service to be good. You're relying on the judge not looking around at what's in the background of their home. The judge is seeing them in the comfort of their home rather than, you know, having to find you know, when it was in-person hearings, they had to find a place to park. They had to walk in. A lot of times they'd be out of breath. They'd, you know, be in pain from walking in, you know. But with the video hearings at their home, they could be sitting on their couch completely relaxed. They could also, they're also operating a computer program, which is, makes it maybe tough for somebody we're trying to say would be more limited in their ability to perform skilled occupations. They're using their hands for somebody who we're trying to say has manipulative limitations. So as far as phone and video, you know, they both have great positives, but some pretty big drawbacks. But we ultimately give the claimant the choice. And usually, you know, they're looking to us for our expertise. So they kind of just say, what do you recommend? And then, you know, we recommend what we think will work best for that claimant.
Yeah, thank you for that overview. I'm kind of intrigued because believe it or not, I did one time see a hearing, but only obviously in person. And how would you prepare somebody for a phone hearing?
So that's one of the biggest things we as representatives have had to get used to. Trying to, you know, for a long time there were not the online video hearings. It was only phone or wait for in person. So that was something we had to kind of learn on the fly. But I think it's actually made myself and a lot of my colleagues better advocates for people because, you know, you have to figure out a way to make something.
I apologize. I have a dog. If you hear a dog barking,
I have a dog at home too. We all love dogs. It's no problem. As I was saying, I think it's made us all better advocates because we're able to kind of get the judge to be able to see the impairment, and we can do that in a number of ways. We can, we can do it in the obvious ways. We can take pictures and turn those into PDFs and upload them into the case file. We can get third-party statements from family members or friends or previous coworkers who can describe, you know, what they've witnessed. We can have those people testify. We can have a lot more detailed statements from a doctor rather than, you know, they dismiss statements. Sometimes it's just check the box forms. Well, now instead of just check the box forms, can list so much or whatever, we have them try to detail exactly how this limitation would affect and try to make a picture in the judge's mind of you know, this limp or using this walker or how this tremor would affect somebody's ability to. Because it's easy when the judge can see it. When we were in the hearing offices,
right,
and the judge could see that tremor, it was easy. But now, and you can't take a picture of a tremor, but you can have a husband or a wife or a parent or a previous coworker explain how debilitating it is. Or you can have the doctor, you know, add a bit of expertise to how debilitating that tremor is, you know, and it's not always captured by one of those check-the-box forms. So it really has, I think, made a lot of us better advocates and better representatives for disabled people.
Thank you. That's really helpful to think through as I try to think what it would want to be like to be you and to have to do that preparation.
Right.
So in the last week, I feel like all of a sudden you guys are back in the spotlight because we saw some updates come out of the Social Security Administration about changes that are going to be coming to the SSDI offices. Can you give us an overview of those changes and, you know, what seems to be great about it? What are the advantages? What, you know, are there any disadvantages to what they're proposing?
Yes. So they released a plan to re-enter the workplace. I think it's a tentative plan so far. But they have a pretty solid outline of a return to their offices. They also, I think the day after that, issued a plan to begin limited in-person hearings. So I think that there's two separate things there. The actual returning to the offices, which has been very needed. I should have mentioned it earlier when I was talking about the application process and why people are so interested. There are some people that still cannot apply online, and there are certain things that happen, you know, administratively and things that just need to happen in person at a Social Security offices. There's been extreme backlogs of mail and faxes and things just sitting at these offices because they only have, you know, one or two people going to check daily that these faxes that, you know, make people's cases go or make people's cases start, and they fall in behind. So it is something that has needed to happen for a while. You know, even trying to get people to answer the phone has not been the easiest thing for well over a year. So having people back in the offices, well, I should say, starting in December, management is going back in the office. Starting January 3rd, I believe, the rest of social, January 2nd, I think, 2nd or 3rd, January 3rd, is they will start, the regular workers will start going back, and they're going to have a, to my understanding, kind of a six-month reentry plan to get people situated back in work. And that will just be so beneficial to clients who are, you know, they're not just applying for disability. There are overpayment cases. There are termination cases. There are cases that really need that SSI cases where they need that in-person interview. And that will just be allowed again. And hopefully there'll be people to answer phones and pick up faxes. So that we're very excited for Social Security offices to reopen. And I think Social Security workers are pretty happy with this plan as well, because they are going to allow employees to telework even more than they did pre-pandemic. I think they're very happy with some of the processes they've set up, you know, the online video hearings being one of them that they plan to keep going even after they're fully reopened. So the general reentry of Social Security is going to be beneficial for both workers at Social Security, but even more so for claimants. And then the return to in-person hearings, they have a plan for that as well. They do not give it an exact timeline for that, but their plan is to start with basically aged and critical and dire need cases, people that have been waiting a long time for hearings, people that are, you know, in economically dire circumstances, people with language barriers, so people that would need interpreters and things like that, older claimants, child cases. They are going to prioritize those cases. I think they said they have identified 3,100 cases nationwide that they're going to start out with in-person hearings with. And they're going to start with management. So your chief ALJs and hearing office chief ALJs are going to start the in-person hearing process. And then, like everybody else, the other ALJs are going to start easing back in starting in January. And to my understanding, they're going to have substantial work from home and telework abilities, but they are going to have designated hearing days in person, and they are going to, for people that are worried that maybe it's a little too soon, I know that they're trying to go above and beyond for safety precautions for, you know, for the workers at Social Security and for claimants alike. I know they're trying to stagger hearings so there's not real overlap between claimants. They're going to have, you know, plastic sneeze guards that we've all kind of become very accustomed to over the last year and a half.
Right.
And they're really just trying to get back to as close to normal as possible. And the one thing they've asked for us as reps with this announcement is please don't cancel any telephone or video hearings that are already scheduled to try to wait for an in-person hearing. So, you know, and I can definitely see why. I think that it's pretty good evidence they want to keep around the telephone and video hearings in the future. And B, they don't want to create a logjam. They don't want to create a backlog because, you know, one thing that this telework has done is allowed them to kind of catch up. They were pretty far behind pre-pandemic, and you know, the hearings are getting scheduled much quicker. The you know, I think the telephone and video hearings have allowed them to kind of disperse work throughout the country and really get caught up. So I think they don't want to get back to a place where they're behind again right off the bat. So
that's been a real advantage, is the catch up.
Yes, that has been a huge.
Yeah.
It's one of the blessings in disguise of the telephone and video hearings is, you know, maybe this hearing office is a little further behind, but, you know, my local office here in Columbia, Missouri is really kind of up to date. So maybe they take some hearings from these other hearing offices and help them catch up. And that's been going on all over the country. And it has really cut down on wait times for claimants, which is absolutely, you know, one of the best things that's come out of this.
Well, this has been a great explanation, Matt, and I'm actually going to ask you a question I realize I probably should have done in the beginning, which is you and I have moved through this conversation very comfortable that you are a lawyer who helps people apply for Social Security disability insurance, but I bet there are some people who don't even understand that using a representative is an option for them when they apply for SSDI. We've got about 2 minutes. Can you give people a headline on the difference between applying on your own and applying with a representative?
You know, I probably have a biased view here, but anybody who asks me, I just say it's going to be so much easier for you and just so much more likely that you're going to be approved on your first try if you have somebody there looking out for your interests. It is, you know, it seems like we've talked about a lot here. We haven't even scratched the surface of everything that goes into one of these applications. And whether it's just getting deadlines done on time, whether it's just knowing these certain rules, you know, because Social Security is not there to help claimants. I mean, ultimately, you know, the program is there to help people, but they're not going to help you get your benefits. Somebody who's trained and somebody who knows this stuff is going to help a claimant just as simple as filing the right way, filing on time, filling out documents correctly. It's so funny how just one little fact that you fill out differently can really change the whole outcome of your case. And people can't believe it. Mm-hmm. When I tell them, you could have two people with the exact same medical impairments, the exact same age, exact same past work, but one person filled out this form this way, the other person filled out this form the other way, and this person gets approved while, you know, the second person is denied. And they say, but it's the same medical impairment. Yeah, but there's so much more that goes into it. And, you know, my job is knowing those things. So, you know, let somebody who knows those things help you. It is a very frustrating process on your own.
I don't have any skin in the game. I guess I do in that I really do want people who deserve benefits and need them to get them as quickly as they can. And I can tell you from somebody who's worked in and around this industry for a long time that I've absolutely seen the statistics that, you know, people with representatives, you know, do get through the process faster and have the outcome that they really want. And on a personal level, I was recently helping a dear friend of a colleague in this industry whose friend is a lawyer, and he's had a very significant sudden onset illness that has absolutely, unfortunately, disabled him for life. But he's turning to representation to help him, and he's a lawyer. But this is just not his area of expertise. So for people listening, this can be really helpful. And I'm going to say right now, because it's time for us to wrap up, Matt, first of all, thank you so much, Matt Imhoff from Integrated Benefits, Inc., for being on our show, for IBI being a member of the Council for Disability Awareness. And we can do a little short series on each stage of the process to walk people through and help them understand. And so with that, I'm going to say one more time, thank you, Matt, for your time and your expertise. Thank you to our audience for listening. If you have questions you want specifically answered on this topic, please drop us a note. And we'd be happy to answer them and get you on the next show. But again, thank you everyone for listening and have a great day.